Something wicked is coming this way, and only fools are ignoring the signs. So it's time you became a financial prepper like thousands of others. Gold can travel anywhere. It's international. It's its own currency. Allocate to gold now, the timeless safe haven asset. Open an IRA with Noble Gold Investments to physically hold coins and bars, and let real, tangible gold, not just paper, save your portfolio as the economy burns again. Right now, Noble Gold Investments offers a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin with every qualified IRA. Just use the promo code GOLD to claim your free coin and secure your family's financial future. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com now. NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
All right, folks, I got a big one for you this time. This is Akshay. Akshay, how do you say your last name?
Nanavati.
Nanavati. Akshay Nanavati is attempting to be the first man, the first, to cross Antarctica by foot. Is that right, Akshay?
Yep, cross Antarctica, dragging a 400-pound sled for 1,700 miles, 110 days, completely alone, solo for the entire time.
And you'll be obviously documenting this, recording it. Will it be live on social media platforms? I mean, I don't even know if you get any kind of Wi-Fi down there. I don't know if you're going to do this.
No, fair question. There is not. I won't be like, I will be. We are creating a documentary around it, but when I'm out there, I'll do it alone. The documentary crew is filmed on all my previous expeditions, but out there, I'll be alone and just kind of documenting it as best as possible with the GoPro, kind of doing video journals as I descend into madness after 110 days alone out there. And
have you even been? Have you surveyed the land? I mean, do you know what Antarctica looks like? I mean, how does it? I mean, I thought that was like uninhabitable. I thought there was nobody there. I mean,
there
have you
is
been there before.
I have. I was in Antarctica 2 years ago on a previous expedition. Me and my team became one of only 26 human beings to ski up a very remote glacier up there called the Axel Heiberg. We skied up the glacier, got to the plateau, and after 17 days off expedition, I got frostbite and lost 2 fingers. So,
Show that again. Looks like you're flipping off my audience. But
there we go. Yep, this is it. Lost the tips of 2 of these fingers, the left middle, right ring finger. Yeah. So they were black. This actually kind of gnarly story. This one was black and had to go, the right ring finger. It was like, I mean, it was dead. It was just a hard black finger. This one, the left middle finger, it actually recovered fully. But the thing is, once you get frostbite, you're for the rest of your life, that portion is always going to be more prone to frostbite. So when I was in the Arctic last year, I was on a series of training expeditions in northern Norway, way north of the Arctic Circle. This finger would get cold faster than the rest of my fingers. So I made the decision to actually preemptively just cut off the tip. So it's because to me, it's a liability. So when I had to get the surgery done in India because no doctor here, like even in India, the doctor was like, we're not going to cut this off. This is like a good finger. We can't ethically cut this off. But the thing that helped convince him, my family's from India. So my mom was there and my mom said, I need you to cut off my son's finger because to me, it was a liability. Like imagine I'm 50 days into Antarctica, 60 days into Antarctica, and this finger gets frostbite and I lose the expedition. That's not right. That's not a price I'm worth, you know, worth
your,
paying.
Your family backs you in this.
They worry, but they support me. They do. They understand the journey. They understand the spirituality of it. They obviously worry at how intense it is, what it's, you know, the dangers, the concerns. But they're supportive, very supportive.
John, you know, jump in anytime you want. But are you telling me, like, how long are you expecting to do this expedition? How long is this going to take?
110 days.
You know that for sure, or are you just guesstimating?
That's the highest that I can take. I mean, if it takes less time, awesome. If I can pull it off in 95 days, 100 days, because let's say I'm covering way more distance than I thought, fantastic. But the highest, like I'll be taking 110 days worth of food with me in the sled. So it cannot take any more than that. If for some reason, like, let's say I just can't pull off the distance, then they can come evacuate me from wherever I was.
Okay, so you're going to have an emergency backup. You're going to be able to call somebody to come and get you immediately if you're in trouble.
There's only two portions. Most of the journey, there's they can evacuate you. Now, obviously, it's weather dependent. So if there's gnarly storms, which there are in Antarctica, nobody's coming then, but you can kind of ride it out in your tent like we did last year. I mean, 2 years ago when I got evacuated. But there's only two sections of the journey where I'm on a glacier that nobody can land there because of crevasses. So other than that, though, evacuation is possible.
I do have a question, Nino. Sure. I want to say I appreciate you having me on this to interview with you, because this is a subject that is really just really interesting to me. I mean, one of the most interesting places in the world.
It is.
So my question to you is why in the world are you risking your life to go hike all the way across Antarctica? And how are you going to be able to carry that much food? Because I believe there was a guy named Colin O'Grady who is at least given the title of the first man to cross Antarctica, which he didn't actually cross it. I was looking at his path, and it looks like he goes to the South Pole and then back, like kind of like a V across the ice shelf there. But he had to carry 300 or 400 pounds of food, travel 20 miles a day, and it took him 54 days to do this. So
let me address the whole thing about Colin O'Grady, the last bit, and then get into a little bit about the dangers and then the why. But so Colin O'Grady, as you said, he did not actually cross Antarctica. He traversed the landmass. There is a map. I can actually show you at some point. You can see his route versus a full coast to coast crossing. If you Google Eric Phillips, Antarctica solo map, he has done a great job creating a map of all the Antarctica solo map. He created like a map of all the crossings of Antarctica. So you can see on there very clearly how he did not actually. So yeah, there's a go to images and then crossing. Yeah, the solo traverses and that top left one there. You'll see the EK. So yeah, there you can see the green route is Colin O'Grady's. It's not a crossing of Antarctica. It's a traverse of a landmass. So that's one distinction. Mine is an actual coast to coast crossing. So mine will be similar to the red line, but not like a little bit different. I'll be ending at a different spot than the red line is Borge Ausland. He is the greatest living explorer.
I see the red line going like this down and then here.
Mine will start at that top exactly where your arrow is, go to the South Pole, and then come straight down to that kind of island there at the bottom of the coast. So kind of there, exactly, right there.
So you're going to do a V.
It is a V, but it's a coast to coast, meaning it's starting at the edge and ending at the edge.
So why don't you just go bing?
To do a full crossing, you have to go to the South Pole, and there's also a bunch of mountain ranges in there. So in the Transantarctic Mountains is there. So to do a full crossing, it has to actually go through the South Pole.
So then you're going to go bing and then bing.
Yes.
Why don't you go bing, make it all the way down this bing?
That would be. the lines that you see that have across, people have crossed Antarctica, but they're using a wind support, so like a kite to propel them faster. Nobody has ever crossed it without a kite or without dogs.
So that's you're doing it on foot this entire year.
Skis, pure man hauling. So that means dragging all my weight. So as you can see, the green route, that's what Colin O'Grady did. He did what's called a land traverse. And you see the second half of the route that's got white kind of dots on it.
Yes.
That what he used, what's basically a paved highway, essentially. There's tracks that they pave a path, and there's flags every 400 feet or so. So you don't have to navigate, and you ski on essentially what amounts to a very flat, smooth terrain. I will not be using that because that's not an unsupported journey. I will not be using a paved highway, which he did. And the third thing that was distinct between my route and his is that the distance he covered has actually been covered multiple times by different adventurers. So it was not quote unquote impossible by any means. That distance of 1400 kilometers had been covered by Alexander Game, by Henry Worsley, and even Borge Ausland, who did the red line right there. He used a small kite for part of the journey, but most of the journey he actually did not, and covered more than what Colin did without wind support. So mine will be purely without wind support, and that distance that I'm covering has never been covered before without wind.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Why not this area here? It looks like nobody's been over here.
There have been adventurers. This map doesn't show a dog crossing. So there was one team that did a dog crossing from literally the furthest you can go. So that's the far east, the eastern tip to the top, like the western kind of peninsula tip.
Over here, down this way? Boom.
It's even doing what I'm doing is borderline. I mean, many explorers consider it impossible to do it because you don't have all the time in the world. You have to do it before Antarctic winter. Antarctic summer is unforgiving and savage. It's like, you know, minus 40 degrees, hurricane force winds. Antarctic winter is 24 hours darkness. You're talking minus 70, minus 80 degrees. It's so cold, the fuel that I use to boil snow, it freezes. So no human beings even attempted a winter expedition in Antarctica. That's, as of right now, logistically not even possible, barring some technological advances. So what I'm doing is...
I thought Antarctica was off limits for a lot of reasons. I mean, I thought it was...
It is not. There's misconceptions about that. I mean, theoretically, if I wanted to go anywhere in that eastern, like that vast expanse on the east, I could. There have been adventurers who've done things like that. It's just, it's more about the like logistics of how to manage it.
So I want to say this. I went to hire a private pilot to see if I could traverse from the very north point of Antarctica all the way to the very south point of Antarctica, and I couldn't find a pilot that would do it. Obviously, they said you have to fly a certain amount, distance high over certain parts because they have some kind of green deal to where you're not allowed to emit any kind of CO2 emissions over a certain part of it or anything like that. Are you aware of that?
So it is highly regulated because of the Antarctic Treaty. And so when we go as adventurers, there's one company called Antarctic Logistics and Expeditions, ALE. They're the ones who manage logistics and permits for all adventurers. So essentially, I go through them and they get the permits. They are also going to be flying me to the pickup point and the drop-off point, things like that. So they're the ones who organize. They have a base that's kind of near the tip of that green line there called Union Glacier. I'll be flying from Chile. That's where I flew in last time as well. I'll be flying from Punta Arenas in Chile to that point called Union Glacier in Antarctica. And then from Union Glacier, around there, yeah. From there, I'll be flying to start point.
Are you pretty confident on this expedition? I mean, it seems like you're going to be facing a lot of unknown factors and elements. I mean, are you kind of nervous? I mean, we've all heard the stories of Admiral Byrd. He says he claimed to see, a crystal city. I mean, there's all kinds of conspiracy theories floating around Antarctica. I mean, are you prepared to see something you never thought you'd see in your wildest imagination? A lot of the conspiracy theories are like,
I mean, because I can't remember what it was, but I remember seeing one video where one guy did this whole conspiracy theory about Antarctica, and I'd actually been to the exact point he was talking about, and I was like, there's nothing like that, you know? So to a certain degree, some of it is exaggerated. I've been to the point where I was at last, where the red line kind of curves. Going back to... that other picture, but anyway, like where I was like 2 years ago. So I'm not so much worried about sort of seeing the like things like that. I've experienced. I know my friends have been up the two glaciers. I was up there last time I was there. I went up that glacier at the bottom of that curve there to the top. Up there, and I was evacuated just kind of around there.
So you've made it. You've been here before.
I've been there, and I've been also to Union Glacier, and then flown from Union Glacier to that point as well. Just looking.
And you're going to cross all this on foot. How steep are these mountains? How high?
The South Pole is at 9,500 feet. So you're actually the ice shelf, which are the top thing there. That's kind of not what's the polar plateau, and at the bottom here where you see McMurdo, you can see the edge of the mountains. That's called the ice shelf. The two ice shelves are flat. But I will have to move up a glacier to go onto what's called a polar plateau, and then down the other side back onto the flat ice shelf. And those, I mean, they're not so steep that you're sort of climbing, but it's work because you're dragging a 400, at that point it'll be a little bit lighter, but dragging a very heavy sled up that glacier. So I'll be coming up the other side, kind of where the top of that red line is, kind of coming right
here.
Up
on here.
No, on the other side of the lake. So go kind of further up northwest there to like where further
over
up
here.
up there on that side. Yep, I'll be coming up there. Exactly. That's where I'll come, because I'll be starting on that coastline and coming up the glacier there. There's a glacier called the Support Force Glacier coming up to the South Pole. So it's not as, so those glaciers are the two most dangerous portions of the trip because of crevasse danger. Crevasses are the most horrifying thing to me. They're the scariest part, but I do have data from a friend. One of my friends is one of only three human beings who's been on the two glaciers that I will be on. You have to go up the glacier to come onto the plateau and then down another one called the Reedy to go onto the ice shelf. And so those two glaciers will be crevassed. And thankfully, again, I have data from my friend to mitigate risks. You can obviously never eliminate it, but polar travel is not as dangerous as, let's say, Alex Honnold's Free Solo. You guys seen that?
No. Have you, John?
No, I haven't. No.
It's a very cool documentary where he free soloed up El Cap, or even like the closest thing it gets compared to often is mountaineering, right? Like climbing Everest, things like that. People compare it to that all the time. But unlike mountaineering, it's not as dangerous. I mean, I've been on big mountains. Like I was on Denali a year ago, and you're at 16,000 feet on a ridgeline so thin and 1,000-foot drop on each side of you, right? Like right on it. Thin ridgeline. And so your mind is forced into being kind of very present. You can't be thinking about things. It's right there because of each step of the fall. So there's danger. There's every day when you're climbing up a mountain is dynamic. As you go up and down the mountain, the terrain changes, the nature of the climb changes, the views change. So it's a little bit more mentally engaging and more dynamic. But obviously there's a risk of falling because you're going up a mountain. In polar travel, it's not nearly as dangerous, but it is far more suffering, like infinitely more suffering. Out of all the things I've done, I've been in the military, I've run ultramarathons, I've been to war, I have been mountain climbing. Nothing compares, at least in terms of voluntary suffering, to polar travel, because you are just dragging this heavy sled in flat white nothingness. So barring like two sections of Antarctica where I'll see mountains, almost all of the journey, every day you look out, there's no stimuli. Every day is the exact same thing. It's just flat, empty, white nothingness. And that is a mind fuck.
So you said, go ahead, Nino. No, go ahead.
No, you're your show.
You go first.
You're an adrenaline junkie. You are.
It's kind of funny you say that, because I actually, the nature of polar travel, you're actually not getting much adrenaline. It's very slow paced. You're moving fairly slowly with a mind numbingly slowly. It's not a sexy sport to watch. Like if you watch backcountry skiing where they're, heli skiing down a mountain, that shit's badass, right? This one is just basically some guy plodding along very, very, very slowly. So it's not so much the adrenaline as it is what draws me to it, I guess, coming to that question of the why. Personally, for me, that level of suffering that you experience, the mind-numbing monotony, the stillness, the solitude. I mean, geographically, portions of this journey, I will be the most isolated life form, not even human being, the most isolated life form on the entire planet. So to me, that is a very spiritual journey to connect to what I would call, what everybody has their own version of this, but what I would call God, connecting to universe, connecting to the self, connecting to the human soul, like in that silence, in that suffering. And when you experience the depth of that suffering in solitude, you have to tap into something in the human soul to transcend that suffering. Nino, you've trained hard. You know how it is when you suffer. You have to find something within to push through that suffering, right? And that is the draw for me on a personal and spiritual level. And then on a sort of to me, every big goal should have a selfish and a selfless reason. So the selfish reason for me is kind of, I would call, enlightenment. It's tapping my own inner Buddhahood, awakening that divinity that every human being has within that you can only find in the depths of solitude and suffering. And selflessly, it's to bring the wisdom back from that edge and share it with others who are suffering, because everybody suffers, but I get to play so far out on the edge, like at a very extreme edge, that I get to then open doors into the human soul that aren't otherwise open very often. And so the treasures that you unearth on the other side of those doors, to me, it's a responsibility. And I mean that genuinely. Like that's a core part of my identity. When I was in Iraq, my vehicle drove over an active IED that didn't explode just for some reason. My friends drove over an active IED. his exploded. He was killed. That shit lives with me. So to me, I believe I have a debt I owe for this life, and I pay off that debt by exploring the edges and bringing the wisdom back from the edge to help others navigate their own version of their own polar storms and suffering and just the human experience that we all endure.
Man, you know, looking at this from my perspective, and I'm one of those conspiracy theorists that I guess that, you know, everybody talks about, but, you know, a lot of the stuff that I've researched over the years, such as Admiral Byrd's journals and such, if they can be trusted, also some of the treaties that really don't, to me, they don't really allow for a complete south to north travel across Antarctica. And I realize why you're not doing it, because obviously you're talking about trying to, who knows how long that's going to take you, how much food you're going to have to carry, and how much non-supported travel you're going to mm-hmm. have there. But you said you're traversing this with your own form of navigation. Mm-hmm. How, if the South Pole is in fact a magnetic South Pole, how is that even possible with basic instruments?
Yeah, good question. So this is, so where I'll be going is actually not the magnetic South Pole. That's a different spot. This is the geographic South Pole. But either way, the compasses, the way they're designed, the technology is unreal compared to what like Amundsen had 110 years ago. So with the compass and GPS, essentially, so GPS will have waypoints data, and then you set the waypoint. Like when you're in a whiteout, you're skiing and you can't see 10 feet in front of you. So it's blank white nothingness. The whole time you just stare at a compass that's attached to a harness in front of you. You set a bearing on the compass, and for 10 to 12 hours a day, you're just locked into that bearing and making sure you're skiing in line with that. And that's how I'll be navigating, is with a GPS and a compass and sitting on a compass harness to get to that geographic South Pole. And the geographic South Pole is the only portion of the journey where you'll see some degree of human civilization, because there's a big research station at the South Pole, ALE, Antarctic Logistics and Expeditions, that I mentioned. They also have their own base at the South Pole. And so that's where I'll kind of pass a small degree of human civilization before I keep moving. And I won't stop at the South Pole at all, because that's a mentally a very easy place to stop and, you know, want to get comfortable, go in for a hot shower. But you don't want to do that, obviously. That's your halfway point. So I'll just keep moving from there.
So where is magnetic South Pole from there?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think if you Google it, I think it's to the further east of the actual geographic South Pole.
Interesting. So as far as you know, and I'm just asking you this, since you seems like you've done tons of research on all the
very much
different traveling that's gone across there. As far as you know, nobody's traversed from the north all the way to the south end of it. I guess it would still be considered north if you look at the Earth as a globe. But has anybody traversed directly, like let's say straight from...
Yeah. Actually, if you go back to that map of the Eric Phillips map, Eric Phillips is a polar mentor and friend of mine. I think it's on that first tab there. That first tab open, I think it's still...
Eric Phillips, right?
Yep. There you go. Antarctica solo map. If you go back to that one and then just go to the image of, so you'll see the yellow line there as well as the light blue line. The yellow line is a very accomplished polar explorer named Rune Gildnes. He, as you can see, kind of went from one tip to the, like a northern tip but to the south, and then further back north to the bottom of McMurdo. That and then the light blue line is from Mike Horn. They've pulled off some of the longest crossings. They used a kite for a big portion of the journey, which allowed them to do it because you're with a kite, you can cover sometimes 100 plus kilometers a day. Without a kite, that's just not.
I'm thinking about a kite a kid flies. What's a kite?
It's like a kite surfing. I mean, it's a huge, if you Google.
Oh, gotcha.
Height. I think just Google like polar skiing kite kind of thing, and I think you should see it. You should see what I'm referring to. Polar skiing kite, something like that.
So is this oriented north south? This map here, so we have the south is at the bottom, north at the top, or is that oriented differently?
It's kind of because the geographic South Pole is. So yeah, here you can see like images, kind of like that picture, snow kite. Yeah, so they'll have like a large kite pulling them along with wind. Exactly, kind of like these guys. Yep, kite skiing. There you go.
Wow, and you're not going to be using that.
I will not be using the kite. So this is what's never been done, is to actually cross without a a kite. Pure so, man-hauling is just fucking pure suffering, man. It's like a
I can imagine.
Yeah.
So you're totally willing to lose your life.
You know, so coming back to the dangers, like it's not nearly as dangerous as mountaineering because again, you're not falling. It's much more suffering, and that's the draw for me. I mean, again, I'm not going to say it's not dangerous, but it is not nearly as dangerous as people think as it gets compared to. It's not like free soloing. It's not like mountain climbing. I have to actually, I'll be checking in with ALE every day from when I come to my tent, just calling them through the sat phone, letting them know, hey, you know, I covered 15 miles today. I'm doing good. Everything is golden. I'll have a live tracker with me. So the two most dangerous portions are the, like in terms of objective danger, are the glaciers because of the crevasses. Now, of course, on the polar plateau, things can happen that are dangerous, like the storms are horrific. If I lose a tent, I'm fucked. But that's kind of like on me to make sure I don't let that happen. That's why I train. That's why I've been on a series of expeditions before. But the storms are, I mean, you're talking like hurricane force winds, minus 40 degrees. So objectively, the weather is obviously extremely unforgiving, gnarly, cold. You can't get, but in modern times, there has been not a single polar adventurer has been killed on a polar expedition. This is modern times, to be clear. Like back in the golden age of exploration, when people were going there for the first time ever, yes, there were a lot of deaths. The British explorer Scott, he died after reaching the South Pole. He was the second team to reach after Roald Amundsen. Him and his entire team died on the way back. But again, back then they didn't have planes. They didn't have sat phones, right? Different world. So it's not as dangerous as people think. It to be very clear, again, not to say it's not dangerous, but it is more just the draw for me is the struggle, the hardship, rather than the danger. I have friends who climbed both K2 and Everest and done South Pole trips, and all of them will say like far more suffering, but not as dangerous.
So on that, I got one question real quick while we're on this, so this Antarctic, I'm looking at this Antarctic map, and so on what we would call our right side, if you're looking at the map, you have places like Princess Elizabeth Land, Kaiser Wilhelm Land, Queen Mary Land, all of these places along there. Are, as an explorer, are you allowed to go to these places? Because to me, in order to, I guess, prove that Antarctica is exactly how it's mapped, you would have to traverse from through that area through there. Is that possible? As just me, like, let's say one day I decide I want to go to Kaiser Wilhelm Land.
Yeah.
Is that going to be possible?
It's quite a logistical challenge, but it is possible. So you just have to find a way to make that happen. It'll be expensive as all hell. Even my journey, because of where I'm going, is very, very expensive. It's $750,000. But there is a team that has gone from the far west polar, the tip on that peninsula called the Larsen Ice Shelf to like towards that Princess Elizabeth and Wilhelm Land. There's a team that's done a 220-day dog crossing. Nowadays, dogs are no longer allowed in Antarctica, but back when they were, they did a full, like, the longest way you can possibly cross Antarctica with dogs. And they've been.
What about if I just flew to those places, though, without crossing Antarctica? Like, let's say I just want to fly to Princess Elizabeth Land or have a plane drop me off.
You could. I mean, like, it's technically, I don't know if. You could do that if you find a pilot to take you and all that, but it's. But when you do enter Antarctica, like, there has been one adventurer who went and just sort of didn't announce his trip, didn't get permits or anything, and he did it. He got out there okay. But
a human catastrophe is closing in. Nobody knows how far this one is going to go. You can feel the heat as tension is rising globally. War is expensive. Open a Noble Gold Investments IRA today, and you can claim a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin. Just use the promo code GOLD. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com now.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
But generally speaking, you'd have to get permits. So ALE kind of helps guide that. But you could theoretically, if you found a way, like you could land there. There is quite like that's the biggest challenge with all these places. It's not sort of you're not allowed to. It's just getting there because of the permits and things like that, and the flights, the cost. You know, all of those factors to go. Like even if you look at the Dome Fuji on that map, there's one adventurer who's gone towards that northeast corner there and done some pretty wild stuff in that corner. And it's, again, it's so you can go, like I could theoretically go all those places. It's just can you afford it? Can you logistically manage it? And how do you safely do it kind of thing?
So let me ask you this. You know, you accomplished this, which we assume you're going to accomplish.
Thank you.
You realize you're going to accomplish a lot of things. You're also destroying, and which I've had these people on my show before, and I've always given them a platform to talk. And believe me, this is a huge debate right now. Mm-hmm. What do you have to say to the people, the flat earthers out there? See, that Antarctica goes around the world. It's like an ice shelf. It's an ice wall. What do you have to say to these people that will tell you, he's full of it. The earth is flat. He's not really going to Antarctica. What do you have to even say to those type of people?
I mean, people are going to believe what they believe, and no matter what I say, you're not going to convince some of them otherwise. But, like, funny story about the flat earthers. When I was in Antarctica last time, I met a friend of mine, a now friend, who drives ice trucks in the Antarctica, and he has this sick video on YouTube. I can't remember what it is. I'll try to find and send it to y'all later. But he actually has a video of a crane because there's the ice shelves, you know, are look like the world is dropping off. A boat comes onto a crane, picks up his ice truck and puts it on the boat. And his video went viral. And I'm like, why did it go viral? And it turns out the flat earthers were using that video to justify that the earth just drops off. But that's just an ice shelf on the edge of Antarctica, which there are tons of edge of ice shelves. So I've been to Antarctica. I know many Antarctic adventurers who are friends of mine. It's just not remotely true. And so, you know.
So, speaking for the flat earthers here, okay.
Please.
Because this is, I'm one of these guys, right? And I'm one of those people that I'm not.
Are you a flat earther, John?
Well, I am definitely a geocentric, have a geocentric idea. I am to the point to where I don't know exactly how the earth is shaped, but I can say this, like from my experience in trying to figure out a way to prove to myself that Antarctica is exactly how it's mapped, I've been unable to do it. Even for $1 million price tag, I couldn't find not that I'm a millionaire, but I could raise the money to do it probably in a few days if I was genuinely going to be able to travel what I would be satisfied with as completely across Antarctica. It was impossible for me to make that happen, impossible for me to get the permits, impossible for me to get the pilot. And so from my perspective as a person that I need to see things for myself, I can't really just 100% rule anything out. I'm not satisfied with the means that is possible for me to be able to see if that's even true. And that's one thing I can reach out. Now, there's a lot of flat earthers that are shills, and there's a psychological operation. Flat Earth Society is I believe that Flat Earth Society is a shill operation to make flat earthers look stupid. But at one time, you got to remember, everybody believed in the flat earth. In fact, there are maps that show that this is the way, because the navigation is exactly the same whether you're on a flat earth, you're on a globe. It all is north is in the center, and you go around. Like, it's not like you're going off the edge or anything like that, because that's not the way it works. But I know a lot of people have misconceptions about what people believe, but to me, I think that unless you can take a ship and go all the way around the coast, which I know that this is years and years long, all the way around.
Take a ship and go all around here?
Just go completely all the way around it. Yeah. Unless you can go all the way around it. To me, it's hard to prove it. Or if you can fly, let's say, from South America.
So they actually do have bases all around, tiny little, like a bunch of countries have little bases all around Antarctica. So there are actually human presence on almost every edge of Antarctica. I mean, large gaps between, but there has been, like I said, there's been one adventurer who's crossed from east to northwest to east. There's another, a couple of who've crossed entirely from north to south. And way back in the golden age of exploration, there has been a lot of mapping done of some of the more remote regions in the early 1900s. And today there are bases, because as you can see from the map you're currently showing, you know, that northwest plateau, that sort of a peninsula, is closest to Chile. But on the other side, you're close to New Zealand. So New Zealand has a base at the bottom there called McMurdo.
Right. And that's what a pilot actually offered me, is from South America to New Zealand. And to me, that doesn't cut it for me. Like, I would need to be from South America to go 100 and 120 degree mark straight all the way through to get to that point in order for me to kind of believe that. And that would and I'd have to see the GPS the entire time I'm doing
it. So no turns. You'd have to go straight across.
Straight across it. Because, I mean, there are old maps as well. And that's the problem. It's like I have to rely on somebody else's word because I can't even get a flight for $1 million across it. So how would I or any normal person that's not, kind of isolated in these certain parts be able to prove that?
You actually could. It's just very expensive. Like one of my friends holds the Guinness World Record for the for circumnavigating the globe. And she, with the team, flew over the, like, I think it was like over the North Pole and the South Pole, like circumnavigated the entire globe.
What was the name of that team? Yannicka Wilson?
Her name is Yannicka. Jannicke. Yannicka Mikkelsen, and then I can pull up on.
How do you spell Yannicka with a Y or with J?
J, yeah. She traversed. Jannicke. Yeah, Yannicka Mikkelsen. That's her. Yeah, she circumnavigated the globe with a small team. She's a friend of mine.
Does it have like the map, the path she traveled? I mean, you said she went through the North Pole and then
flew over Antarctica. Had some wild stories from that. I'm sure it's somewhere. I don't know all the details, but so you mean again, a lot of the things are possible. They're just logistically quite a challenge and extremely expensive to do. Even in Antarctica, it's like I can go where I want. This is some other Danish explorer, yeah. But a lot of the stuff.
John, are you able to pull it up?
Yeah, I'm going to try to pull it up. I'm looking for it. Jannicka. I'm trying to look at the map. If I can find it, I'm looking here. Okay, I see a map, and I think this is. No, that's the longest walk. I don't know. I'm having trouble finding the map of it, but I'm sure it's there.
Isn't this it right here?
Is that it?
Is that it?
No, that's an old Danish explorer, it looks like.
So let me ask you this.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, when I was boxing, I got a lot of adrenaline. I lived on adrenaline. Okay. It was always fight or flight mode. It was just always in that mode. And then once I retired, there's a lot of fighters that retire from boxing or UFC or whatever, and they never get that adrenaline rush back. They always just, it's kind of like life loses its shine because you need that constant fight or flight in your bloodstream. You need that constant adrenaline in your bloodstream. And that's why a lot of them go to drugs, cocaine, heroin, whatever. Feel that need, but it never really feels the need. I've been able to stay sober and I'm living a completely different life, but I really had to accept, life without that stimulation anymore. And I got to say, life is a lot more peaceful because I have a lot of wisdom in which I've learned through the years of boxing. It kind of taught my soul some very valuable lessons. But when this is over for you, when it's done, are you going to try to do something to top this? Or are you finally going to say, I did it. My soul's content. Now I can rest. What's next for you after this?
Let's see if
you accomplish this. What's next?
Great question. I get where you're coming from. There is a tremendous amplification and intensity of life. The volume gets dialed up massively on expedition. So when I come back after every expedition, it's almost like I come back from war. There's kind of a low that hits, but I think for me, the part of like the joy in life is the ups and downs, is the roller coaster, because you can't have a summit without a valley. You can't have a high without a low, So I value the low as much as I value the high. But as far as like what's next, in terms of adventures, I do know, for example, one, I want to get back into cave diving. It's a little bit more.
Damn, you're going from one to the next. That's horrible. That's horrible. I watched that stuff on YouTube.
It's more. It's sort of. It's
cave
not
diving physically, like in the water, going to underwater cave.
I've done some cave diving before, and it's very.
Why don't you just play Russian roulette?
It's not. Again, it's, you can do a dangerous thing, but do it in a safe way. Like I do things that push the edge, but I am very safe in how I do them because I train relentlessly. But more importantly than also adventures, like I want to focus. I just got married. I've been married now 3 months. So I want to spend some time with, like, the first year of my marriage, I'm gone for 6 months because I'm going to Iceland next week for a month-long solo expedition. And then in August, I'm going to Greenland for a month-long crossing of Greenland again. I've crossed
Did Greenland. Did she know what she signed up for before you got married?
On our second date, we had a long talk about me going to Antarctica. You know, so she knew before we started because we've only been dating about 8-9 months. We got married 6 months in. So we, you know, she knew that this has kind of been on my kind of my life's goal for, or at least directly for 4 years. But in many ways, I think it's a culmination of decades of pushing the line and playing on the edges, you know. So I don't think, like, I don't know where it'll take me in terms of adventures, but I do know I want to focus a little bit more on, like, time with my wife, staying put a little bit on the marriage, and also building the brand a little bit more, focusing on sharing the lessons I learned to help other people have their own versions of their Antarctic crossings, whatever that may be. You know, we're going to film a documentary around it. So releasing the documentary, sharing a book around
it. Is this documentary, is it going to be on Netflix? Are you going to try to put it on Netflix and something like that? Yeah, I mean, there's some great documentaries.
It'll be something like that, exactly, like a Netflix will go, you know, where...
So you are going to document your whole... You're going to bring a GoPro and record all of it.
And they filmed a series of... They came and filmed me in the Arctic. They filmed me in Iceland. They filmed me in Arizona. They filmed me in Alaska when I was just there. They also filmed me in Mexico when I did a 10-day darkness retreat where you just sit in a dark room for 10 days, like completely dark, 10 days, 24 hours a day in complete darkness. They came and filmed me coming out of the darkness as part of the... I did that as training for mastering, you know, internal stillness of mind and mastering solitude. So I did that darkness retreat year and a half ago as well. And so they filmed a series of footage we've accumulated from all my trainings. And then Antarctica is obviously the culmination.
Yeah, because white rooms will make you go crazy, too. From what I understand, I was watching this show where they put people in these white rooms, and eventually they were almost losing their mind because there's literally no stimulation. So you'll kind of have that going on in Antarctica, huh?
Antarctica, exactly. Like they say, I've heard from polar adventure friends, when you come back from a really long trip in Antarctica, it takes a few weeks for your eyes just to readjust to seeing stimuli again. So you're kind of like, I wouldn't say blind, but semi-blind. Yeah. I mean, I'll be a wreck when I come back. You know, my wife is prepared. I'll be physically in bad way, mentally a little weird. I'm actually taking – you ever seen the movie Castaway where Tom Hanks talks to his little Wilson? Yeah. I'm taking my own little Wilson with me. I have a little stuffed pillow that'll be my Wilson that I'll be talking to for the 110 days out there.
You must do CrossFit or something, man. I mean, what do you do? What do you do to stay in shape for this? Because what's the weight of the food you're carrying?
So the food is the heaviest thing in the sled. I'll be eating about 6,600 calories a day. And burning 8,000 to 10,000. So even from day one, I'm at a caloric deficit. So one of the things I'm actually doing is polar exploration is a very unique beast to train for, because you have to train endurance. I'll be dragging the sled for 10 to 12 hours a day. You have to train strength to be as strong as you need to drag that sled. And you have to do it all while you're fat. So I'm actually consciously, constantly trying to get fat so I have weight to lose, because like every expedition I've gone on, especially the longer ones, you lose weight out there. So I'm like trying to get fat to make sure I have weight to lose. But I'll be eating about 6,600 calories, and I've managed to get 6,600 calories to weigh 1,060 grams, so just over 1 kilo per day bag of food. And so you add that all up, that's, you know, that's 110, 120 kilos. Plus fuel is the second heaviest thing. Fuel, because you have fuel to boil snow for water. That's the second heaviest. And the rest of it, I mean, I'm literally wearing the same underwear base layer the entire 110 days. So I'm so ruthless with weight cutting that, you know, the tags on your shirt, I've cut those tags off. I've cut my toothbrush in half. Just anywhere, like the zippers on my tent. My tent is actually sitting right here. I have the zippers on my tent that I've cut the zip handles off to save more weight. So all
you cut your finger off.
I've cut my finger off. Exactly. Save more weight. Exactly.
I was like, you don't have to carry around a pillow. Just tattoo a face on your hand, and it can also be your girlfriend too.
That's one sort of quote unquote luxury item that I'm taking. It's a very small stuffed pillow. It's got a laughing Buddha.
Rosie and her five sisters, in your case, four sisters. I'm just blown away by this. Do you feel like, what about the conspiracies out there that you, the unknown factors, are you prepared for this? I mean, you got to equate that into the equation. You got to factor that in. What about anything unknown? I mean, nobody's really, I mean, as far as I know, that I was always under the impression that no, Antarctica has never really been explored.
So there, I mean, most of what, where I have been, where I'll be going, a handful of people have actually been there. So I know the one person who's been on both the glaciers. He's actually like one of only, and he led both trips. He's one of only three human beings to have been on the glacier. There's only a very small portion of the journey that I'll be on that no human being has ever set foot on. But it's kind of connecting certain routes that I'll be stepping on, because nobody's done a full crossing, but people have done portions of the route. And I'm kind of, you know, putting those, all those together to do a full crossing. So there'll only be portions of the journey that no one's ever set foot on. But otherwise, like, it, a lot of it has been covered by, I mean, again, less than a handful of people.
And,
but
you're, I know, pulling, and you're pulling, how much is this sled, weigh?
At the higher end, highest end, I'm estimating about 400 pounds.
You're pulling a 400 pound sled through snow and ice. It's 400 pounds.
So I was just in Alaska training, and I would go out with 400-pound sleds, and I actually got to the point I was dragging 560 pounds just because I want to drag even heavier, right? Suffer harder in training.
Wow. Wow.
And it is, I mean, it's just, there's no other way to put it. It's fucking work, but it's beyond the physicality of it. It's mentally, because you're moving so slow. So there's this kind of mind-numbing monotony, you know, unlike, let's say, when I was ultra running. Yeah, I may be doing long distances, but you're kind of moving. You're seeing new things as you move, right? You're running. So you're moving a little faster. With when you're pulling a 560 pound sled, you're moving so slow. So it's the mental challenge of that is demanding, but also for me a big part of the draw. Like, can you mentally endure this, you know? And that it was, I mean, as you guys know, right, you got to suffer harder in training. So I dragged a very heavy, like 560 pounds is as high as I got to get a feel. So because the brain thinks in references, so when I now have a 400 pound sled, it comparatively feels even lighter than what I've trained with, even when I go to Iceland.
You're not factoring in blizzards, are you a blizzard?
I've been in Antarctic storms. I've been in Arctic storms, so I'm familiar with them. And like anything, you know, you have to train to be the eye of the storm in this case, a very literal storm, but even a figurative storm, you know, to train to stay still in the face of that. So I've been in, like last year I was in the Arctic, and this massive 60-mile-an-hour winds were hitting, and the direction changed. So usually when you set up your tent, you set up your tent so the wind's going from the back to the front. It's called a tunnel tent, so it's designed to kind of have the wind go over you. But in Antarctica, usually the wind stays consistent. In the Arctic, it moved. So it moved to the side of my tent, and I was literally sitting inside my tent with my hands up like this, holding the side of the tent, because the wind was just pushing me down. You know, it was just hammering me. It's 59, 60-mile-an-hour wind. So I've been in the storms before, so I've mentally trained myself to be able to stay calm in the face of them. And I will be skiing in those blizzards. As I mentioned, when you're in a whiteout, you know, like, you can't see shit, but you're just staring at the compass in front of you and just following that to stay in, doing that for, again, 10 to 12 plus hours a day. It's
like, if someone invites you on a ski trip, you're like, whatever.
All my friends who actually do like alpine skiing and snowboarding, they think cross country skiing is the stupidest shit in the world. They're like, why would I walk with sticks in my feet?
I mean,
mind blowing. Their own,
it's, man. Okay if you agree.
Teach their own, dude. I mean, you're doing what you want to do. I just, man, the whole 500 pound sled thing, I mean, just factoring in all the elements, I just, man, I,
for 10 hours with a 500 pound sled. Yeah.
So it'll be in Antarctica, it'll a be day. 400 at the highest end. And you know, every day you eat food and use fuel, it's getting lighter. So the first portion of the journey, about I think 20 to 25 days, will be pure flat. Hopefully not that soft snow, but harder snow. But if you get what you get, right? Every season, Antarctica conditions are, Antarctica is just savage. It is what it is. Now, at the same time, there's a little bit of luck element. Like if I get soft, like horrifically soft snow, that's going to be brutal. When I was in Antarctica last time, the sled wasn't nearly as heavy, but we got some soft snow, and even 18 days worth of food in soft snow, man, it is work. It is hard work. But pulling that for 25 days in flat terrain, so the sled will be a little bit lighter by the time I have to start climbing. Then I climb the glacier, this glacier called a support force, go uphill at that point. And I mean, that's why I train the way I train. You know, I've been in Alaska. When I'm here in Arizona where I live, I drag tires around my local parks. So I have these very heavy truck tires. It's quite a sight, as you can imagine. But I just drag these tires around the parks out here. That's my training.
And how much of the day is light and dark? Like, look.
In Antarctica, when I go, it'll be 24 hours of daylight. So no darkness at all. That's actually one of the things I miss the most, because I love sunrises and sunsets. So it just also makes you appreciate, like, one of the other reasons why I do this is...
Which is not possible with a flat Earth.
No. There you go. But it does.
Well, it depends. It does. I mean, I think actually it should, you said you're going during the winter time, right? Though that would be the closest that the sun would be to the ice wall pretty much all the time, right? If it was an ice wall, So,
yeah, in winter, it's
so you're a flat earther, John. You are.
I am a person who believes that this earth is not exactly what we've been said. I don't like to use the term flat earther, because I don't know 100% exactly what we're living on or how it's made. I just feel like there's so many things that are hidden and so many obstacles to me being able to figure it out myself with my own eyes that. I'm not 100% on board with the whole story, man. I know I'm with you on a flat earth. Yeah.
I'm with you on that. I'm the same. I mean, I kind of feel there is some kind of firmament, but I do believe in outer space. I don't know. I have just as many questions as anybody else. You know, but actually, this is, where can people, are you taking donations? Are you?
Yeah, like, no, I would appreciate any support. We've had a crowdfunding campaign going to fund this. As I mentioned, it costs $750,000. Part of this is for the flights. Part of it is because normal Antarctic season for adventurers is 85 days. They're extending it just for me, which means you have a skeleton crew at Union Glacier, a pilot, doctors, all these factors. It adds up to a lot. So our crowdfunding campaign has so far raised $312,000. It's at greatsoulcrossing.com. So great, G-R-E-A-T, soul, S-O-U-L, and crossing, greatsoulcrossing.com. There's a crowdfunding campaign. And in addition to like different donation tiers, I also give away different tools, like the mindset tools I've developed over decades of playing on the edges on how to cultivate this kind of resilience and ability to move through hard challenges for different donation tiers. So we're giving that away. And I'm not making a dollar off this, to be clear, like not a single dollar I am pocketing. It all goes to ALE to fund the expedition. So it's all towards that. Any support is obviously really much appreciated. And it will, because as I mentioned,
I'll donate, definitely. I feel like you're going to need to, we're wearing the same underwear, right?
Yeah,
I'm gonna make sure you have some very warm underwear, because if you get frostbite down there, you're not gonna have wife anymore. You're gonna lose your wife. You're gonna really have your little friend on your hand.
Yeah, man.
I appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
You got any other questions, John?
I just think it's amazing that you're willing to do this and put your life on the line to do it. Obviously. You know, all jokes aside, like, I believe the world is a little different than what we've been told. But either way, the fact that you're doing this just shows that you are a glutton for adrenaline, punishment, all of those things, just to be able to attain that inner peace. And which I understand that, you know, we all have to go through something hardcore sometimes to be able to understand what it really means to have peace or have joy. So I understand it, man. When I was a kid, I was a bad kid, but in my neighborhood, the only way to get adrenaline was running around knocking people's windows out, or banging on doors. And then now I do jujitsu, grappling, a little bit of striking and stuff like that. So I get it, man. But you've taken it to a whole higher level than I've ever dreamed of doing. So yeah.
So let me ask you, are you up for some challenges, maybe by, like, I don't know, I've always thought, has Lake Tahoe fully been explored? Do you know that Jacques Cousteau went there and said the world was not ready for what he saw, right? The bottom of Lake Tahoe supposedly has like caverns, and like, it's so deep, and like, there's things he saw that he wasn't able to relate to the public. And would you be willing to, like, and I could be wrong, the audience could check this out and be like, no, that's not true. That's what I've heard. Are you willing to take recommendations on your next challenge after Antarctica?
I'm definitely open to recommendations. Like, as I mentioned,
cave diving. I thought of this because you said cave diving.
Cave diving, exactly.
So, I mean, Lake Tahoe, have you heard of this?
I have not heard of the this in Lake Tahoe. I know there's still, you know, a handful of untouched portions of the world, like cavers who will find a new cavern and literally no human beings ever set foot in there. That's pretty wild to think about, you know. So,
I help you raise money to set the record straight on Lake Tahoe?
I'm open to exploration, brother. Absolutely. That's kind of what it was makes you come alive, is not just exploring the external reality, but the internal reality as well. And so finding new adventures, I'm definitely open to ideas, and we'll see where the road takes me after Antarctica as well, in terms of what specifically that I choose to embark upon.
Johnny, anything else?
Nothing else, man. I was planned on looking at this and seeing the same kind of expedition that Colin O'Grady did at first. So I was like, well, this guy is going to just be kind of going across a little part of it, but you're really willing to make a long trip, man. And that's pretty awesome. And I just want to say again, I appreciate it, Nino, for having me on. And it was really nice to meet you, Akshay. And I hope that I get to stay in contact with you, man.
Please, would love to. Yeah. Thank you both. No, appreciate you having me.
I'm excited for your journey. So when does this begin? November?
End October of this year, I'll be flying to Chile, and then sometime in early November, flying to Union Glacier, and then from there to the Star Point. And then I'll be there.
You'll be done when?
End of February, so about just under 4 months.
So you'll be spending the New Year in Antarctica.
Spending Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, a lot of holidays, Valentine's Day, a lot of holidays out there alone in the ice.
Wow. But,
yeah.
Actually, man, I commend you, bro. You're a true explorer, adventurer, man. Wow. So, folks, go to greatsoulcrossing.com. Give actually a donation for warm underwear, because he can't afford to be frostbitten down there.
Yeah, do not want to be. I don't mind losing more things. Not down there.
All right, actually, thank you so much, man. Thank you for joining me. John, thank you for co-hosting this. You guys are awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.